What's up, everybody? Welcome to the second episode of the podcast to be named later. I am David Azer alongside Zach Coe. Zach, we still don't have a podcast name.
No, we don't. Didn't even come anywhere close to settling on either.
Yeah, honestly, didn't even have a discussion on it. But no. I'm kind of rocking with the name for now, and it will change. So stay tuned on that. But Thanksgiving was yesterday. We're recording this on Black Friday. A lot of stuff happens in the world of Red Sox. A lot of smoke.
Yeah, a lot of people hate their families and didn't want to spend any time with them yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. So we had a bunch of Soto leaks from a bunch of reporters I've never heard of, and that's never good. I feel like this happens most often in baseball.
Yeah, that Glenyell Garcia guy, he doesn't have a goddamn clue about what's going on. And Marino Pepin, I just immediately dismiss as anything. But obviously we're going to get into it. But this other guy, I guess he had Jim Montgomery. But I was saying before we started here, like I could have had Jim Montgomery by just tweeting breaking sources say the Bruins have decided to dismiss Jim Montgomery. Like that was the most obvious firing of all time. You got boat raced at home by the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah.
And supposedly he had the Porzingis stuff before everybody else that he was coming back again in that game against the Clippers last week. That I lend a little bit more credence to. Mm-hmm. Also works for the Kirk Minahan show, who I just automatically dismiss as clickbait because was it like week 4 or 5? Minahan was like breaking. The Patriots are going to fire Gerard Mayo on either Friday or Friday. Like, well, okay, buddy, they're not going to fire a guy 3 days before a game after he spent the entire week installing the plan and setting up the game plan. Like, so I tend to just dismiss anything Kirk Minahan does. And I am leaning that way with this Mick guy. As well. He's not the Mick man, so I don't trust his opinion. Weird day on Red Sox Twitter.
Very weird day. Yeah. So it came out that the Red Sox had an agreement with Juan Soto from this random guy who both of us have really never heard of. And then some other people took it and ran with it. There were floating an agreement on like a 13 year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like $625 million, which not to mention, I don't even think $625 million gets that deal done.
No.
But also you see it from an unverified source, and especially in the baseball world, I feel like false reports come up so much more often than any other league. It's hard to take any sort of, you know, vested interest with it because it's not coming from a Passan. And really, maybe you feel differently on this. If it's not from Passan, I really don't trust any of it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously with Boris, it's interesting because he has Heyman in his back pocket. So, like, but even then, like, Aaron Judge is a Boris guy, too, isn't he? And he still said Arson Judge to the Giants. Yeah. So, like, he was still wrong on that, too.
Right.
Ken Rosenthal, I do think, tends to be spot on, although I've been looking for reasons to discredit him because I don't like the Tristan Casas trade rumors.
I hate that, too. Yeah.
But, yeah, Passan and Rosenthal really are the top two. And then, like, as far as, like, Red Sox-related news, like, I think we have a lot of really good beat reporters.
Oh, yeah.
Chris Cotillo and Alex Speer. Sean McAdam has been in the market for a million years. So, like, I tend to trust his takes on that stuff. And I'm sure we'll get into some of the stuff that McAdam said on the Fenway Rundown about Juan Soto. But, yeah, unless it's Passan or Rosenthal, I kind of just tend to dismiss it until one of those guys confirm it. And then, like, I don't know. I mean, it's easier to say, sorry, I didn't trust you afterwards than just like jump out and be like, oh my God, they got Juan Soto.
Yeah. And that's the thing with social media nowadays is everybody just sees, oh my God, like per source, Juan Soto signing with the Red Sox and run with it.
Yeah. Well, it's like I told you that story about my Thanksgiving where I was down in the basement with my cousin and my cousin's boyfriend and a bunch of other people. My girlfriend walks downstairs, seeing that Mick guy's report saying that they got Juan Soto. And she's like, oh my God, they got Juan Soto. And this poor asshole next to me is like, oh, they did? I was like, no, they did not.
It was a weird day. Yeah. Like, I wasn't expecting anything to break. And let alone a false report to break.
Yeah, especially because we had those, what was it, the report that Ortiz was, like, going to meet with him today.
Yeah.
And, like, I know Bradfoe said this, they're neighbors. So, like, it would make sense that he would see, like, he would see David Ortiz on,
yeah,
like, on Thanksgiving. Like, they're, like, Ortiz has been very vocal saying, like, oh, like, I'd be his godfather if he came, yeah, to the Red Sox. Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, it's no surprise that David Ortiz wants Juan Soto to come to the Red Sox. Like, this is a guy that he's really good friends with.
Yeah.
Potentially going to the team where he had a Hall of Fame career with, like, like, oh, that he wants that guy to come? Like, no way.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm kind of jumping all over the place here, but I know we had that. We had that other report that Devers spent an hour on the phone,
yes,
with Soto, talking about the Red Sox, which, like, I mean, it just feels weird for that to be on Thanksgiving. Like, I'm not doubting that it happened. Like, if there's going to be a, which not if there's going to be, there is a pitch to Juan Soto to get him to the Red Sox. So it makes sense that his fellow countryman that is already on the team and already a superstar on the team is going to call him and tell him about playing in Boston and, like, what the situation is like there. Like, I don't think that's, like, ultimately I think it's going to come down to money, but, like, I don't know, like, for all this stuff to come out on Thanksgiving is just so weird. And it screams of, all the major reporters know that nothing's going to happen, so they're putting their phones down and spending time with their families. So right. All these random idiots on Twitter are like, oh, breaking news, Juan Soto to the Red Sox. Rafael Devers and Juan Soto were talking for the last 17 hours on the phone about joining the Red Sox. Like,
yeah, it's and to go off of that, like, I don't know if this is directly related to that, but just in general throughout this whole Soto sweepstakes, I don't know if it's just because we're Red Sox guys, if we're all over Red Sox Twitter, but I feel like no smoke has been the same for other teams in the in these sweepstakes.
No, and I do think it's particular to the Red Sox. I know a lot of people on Twitter think it's because they're being used as leverage against the Yankees, but, like,
yeah,
why wouldn't the Met, like, oh, the Red Sox, the Hector Gomez said the Red Sox offered Soto, was it 13 and 625?
I think 13, yeah.
And, like, I do believe that. Like, I think that was the Red Sox initial offer because I think Hector Gomez knows what he's talking about, blah, blah, blah. But with that report out there that Steve Cohen's just going to slap 50 mil on top of everything that anybody offers, like, wouldn't the leverage be, hey, Hal Steinbrenner, Juan Soto is going to stay in New York and he's going to the Mets. He's going to your crosstown rival. Like, I understand, like, oh, like, the Red Sox-Yankees rivalry. But, like, in terms of, like, money, like, I trust Steve Cohen to spend that money way more than I trust John Henry to spend that money.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess it's all semantics, but, like, I don't know. I think he's coming here. I'll just lead with that. I'm convinced.
But what has convinced you on that?
I just think that – so what really convinced me on that was I think this was after we recorded. Hal Steinbrenner, after those first meetings, was like, yeah, like, weird. He was asking us about, like, the farm system in the future. And he was like, I just think he hasn't spent enough time down there to know, like, what we're building in the farm system. And, like, to me, that's, like, a complete, like, oh, like, the Red Sox, because the Red Sox obviously met with Soto before the Yankees did.
Yeah.
So, to me, that's Breslow and Warner and whoever else was in that meeting said, hey, look at these guys. We got Roman Anthony. He would rank top 10th percentile in hard hit rate in the majors if he was up right now, and he's only 20 doing it at AAA. We've got Christian Campbell, who was a third round pick, who's hitting the piss out of the ball. Like, we have all these guys coming up. We have Casas, which I will get into the Casas trade rumors, which are, I know they're driving you insane. They're also driving me insane. Yeah. Like, they have all these young talent, and then for him to immediately be like, oh, hey, what's up with your farm system? I don't really see a whole lot about, other than this Martian guy who never plays. Like, I don't really hear
a whole lot.
He's
been in the minors for a long, long time now.
Yeah, he's been a top 10 prospect for, like, at least the last 5 years or something like that. Like, you've been here, like, I think I saw this on Twitter. I wish I could credit who it was, but it was a while ago, so I don't remember who it was. But if Jason Dominguez didn't have the nickname The Martian, he'd be irrelevant.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah.
So I think that directly came from the Red Sox, like, saying we have all this young talent. So that, to me, this was like, oh shit. Like, this is for real. Like, he might actually be coming here.
No, when you put it like that, I mean, I'm trying to, you know, lessen my expectations. Especially just given the track record of the past few years. And I know that's a broken record at this point, and things seem to be trending upward this offseason. But until I see a passing tweet breaking Juan Soto to the Red Sox or Burns to the Red Sox, anyone like that, I'm just not 100% sold. Mm-hmm. The smoke is encouraging regardless of whether or not they sign him. I think that means they've taken their heads out of their asses. They feel like they're in a great position to build, whether that be Soto, whether that be through the starting pitching market or whatever. We'll see. I think we also mentioned that before we started recording that this Soto decision could come even this week, maybe definitely before winter meetings.
At the very start of it. Yeah.
Right. So this could be over within the next couple weeks. Like, first week of December, he could be signed, and then the rest of the market will really get going there.
Yeah, especially the hitter market. I think the pitcher market might start to move a little quicker once the winter meetings get underway. I mean, also, so many of these guys are Boris guys. So, like, the Red Sox could be calling, or any team for that matter, could be calling about Soto and also be like, oh, well, while I'm here, like, what's Freed looking like? Or what's Burns looking like? Or something like that. So I do think things are going to start to move pretty quickly once Soto signs. Sean McAdam on the Fenway Rundown, he was saying that same exact thing you just said. It's going to move pretty quickly. It could be before the winter meetings. It could be right at the start of the winter meetings. Obviously, the winter meetings start next Sunday, December 8th. So it's encouraging. He even kind of made it sound like it could happen as soon as like this weekend, which I am kind of doubting because I feel like there will at least be another round of offers. Because I don't know about you, I believe the Hector Gomez report with that offer. I think that was the Red Sox initial offer. I think they probably came in somewhere around like, I don't know, 10 or 12 for like $550. And then when they heard some of the other offers, they were like, oh shit. Like, we got which is encouraging to me that they were willing to go step up and be like, let's say their original offer was 10 and 550 at 55 AAV, to be like, oh, like 55 AAV isn't going to get it done. Like, to slap another 75 mil on top of a deal in an extra however many years, that's a big deal to me. Right. But yeah, I don't know what you do. Do you think that Hector Gomez report was on or?
Yeah, I know we talked about it before we hit the record button too. Was he's usually pretty reliable.
Especially
with Dominican players, like he had a pipeline there especially. And also I just think the big point there with the Red Sox reportedly upping their offer is the whole conversation when we first heard that Juan Soto or the Red Sox were in on Juan Soto was, are they actually in or are they just kicking the tires and going to offer him some insulting contract that he's not even going to look at?
Well, that was kind of the question with Ohtani last year, because it did seem like they were at least interested in Ohtani, and then once the price got at, what did he get, 700 or whatever it was? I mean, no one was outbidding the Dodgers for that, but once they realized the price range that they were talking about, they were like, oh yeah, I'm probably all set on that, which I understand, but, like, I mean, it's frustrating, but...
Yeah. So what would you put your percentage at now that Soto is signing with the Red Sox?
100.
100?
I think he's coming here.
I can't put it that high. Like, I'm more at, like, 45.
That was 100% with my heart.
Yeah.
My brain is, I think the Yankees are out. I think if he was going to re-sign with the Yankees, I think it would have been done by now. I think if they hit a number, they would have. The Mets do scare me because, I mean, obviously, I don't think any of these teams in the mix have a better farm system than the Red Sox do.
Absolutely not.
But I think the Mets have a better farm system than the Yankees, obviously.
Yeah.
But for Steve Cohen to immediately, like, it's going to come down to, like, what is, there have been a lot of reports out there that Soto has a number, and once that number gets hit,
yeah,
it's just going to be, where does he want to play? So I think it comes down to what is that number, and when Steve Cohen hits that number, and then he still says, hey, sorry, I'm going to sign with the Red Sox, or, like, I mean, we haven't mentioned the Blue Jays yet, but I don't think
they're a non-factor.
Yeah. I think, like, what if Steve Cohen says, like, oh, okay, you're going to sign with the Red Sox for this because they hit your number and I already offered 50 mil. How about 100 mil? How about 13 and 800? Like I think he's that desperate to try to get a guy like Soto in
right
into the Mets.
Yeah. But here's my thing with that is the desperation from the Mets is pretty evident. It has been kind of since Steve Cohen took over, and it's so weird to me how these sweepstakes have played out, because the Red Sox during the season were not mentioned pretty much at all.
No.
And now they're in the forefront of all of this smoke that's being thrown around. So it really comes down to what Juan Soto values. If he values money over everything else, then I think he's going to the Mets. If he values competing for a championship for the majority of however long this contract is, then I think unbiasedly or objectively speaking, the Red Sox are the best team to do that. They have the young talent that hasn't even gotten called up yet. They have the cornerstone players at this point, and they have a lot of tools that they can move around to continue to build around Soto. I don't think the Mets have that. I don't think the Yankees have that either.
Yeah, and it's weird when you say, like, oh, I think the Red Sox give him the best chance to win, because, I mean, the casual fan or even the Yankee fan looking to discredit your argument would just say, oh, yeah, you guys have been in the cellar for the last however many years, like, blah, blah, blah. Well, like, first of all, you guys have one ring in the last almost 20 years, so, like...
Yeah, and wasn't even competitive in this World Series.
Well, more than 20 years, I guess it would
be.
You have one ring. So, like, who are you to talk about being competitive? But, right. Any team that signs, like, I guess in the Yankees case and even the Mets case, they were just in the NLCS. They have a team that's already built to win. Soto would be coming in the beginning of the Red Sox championship window.
Yeah.
So, it's like, I mean, like we were saying before the show started, I don't think they're going to, if they sign Soto or not, like, I don't think they're going to win a World Series next year, no matter what they do. But I think that we'll be able to see, like, every year, besides maybe 22, we've seen people take steps forward.
Yeah.
And start to see things, like, develop and come into the picture. And, like, I know I said this, but, like, I'm actually kind of starting to buy into the plan that they've been pitching to us these last couple of years of, we want to develop this solid young core, bring them up, and then when they're ready to compete, then it's go time. And we saw that kind of happen in the mid-2010s. And obviously, 2013 is the outlier. I mean, that team just kind of – I mean, it was the right group of guys to galvanize around a city and bring a title. But that team was never meant to win a World Series. Like,
oh, definitely
Ben Sherrington didn't put that team together and be like, oh, yeah, this is the one.
We're all in. Yeah.
Like, that team was never built to – that team was built to bring up the JBJs, the Bogarts. Yeah. Even at the time, Will Middlebrooks looked like he could be a piece to build around. Now we're seeing that. We saw that continue on with – Mookie and Devers, and when they finally were time to go all in, they started with David Price, Craig Kimbrell, then they added Chris Sale. Like, you knew they were all in heading into that 2018 season.
Yeah.
And it kind of feels like we're getting to that point right now. Like, I think we're going to see a couple big deals, like a Price deal, like a Kimbrell deal. And then maybe, depending on where that 17 year they lost to Houston in the ALDS.
Yeah.
They, like, weren't really even competitive.
Right. Yeah, I think that might have been the divisional round.
Yeah.
I don't know if they made the... Oh, yeah, no, the Yankees lost to them in the ALCS that year. Mm-hmm. But to go off of that, you mentioned, like, the plan and kind of buying into it. I think that's exactly what the Dodgers did. And they have built this farm system that there's a bunch of guys that are still in the top 100 prospects that haven't even gotten called up yet. And at this point, they are a juggernaut. They're going out and still bringing in all these supplemental pieces for huge money deals. And before you are able to do all that, you need to establish the farm system. I haven't seen the Mets or the Yankees really do that at all. It's all been just going after the biggest fish every free agency, whether that works out or not. But looking at their farm systems, they are nowhere near the Dodgers or the Red Sox at this point.
No, and I think the Mets kind of started to do that when they
right.
– I think that first offseason where we really saw Steve Cohen take over and be like, all right, let's get Verlander, let's get Scherzer. And obviously that didn't click. And then they went out and they were willing, because Steve Cohen has unlimited money and he doesn't care about spending it, he was willing to say, I'll eat this money. I just want you to give me a better prospect in return. So obviously they got Luis Angel Acuna, a couple other guys.
Right.
But like, even just looking like a quick glance on the MLB top 100, the Mets also have five top 100 prospects, but their highest rated prospect is number 40, 52, 74. So they have mid to back end top 100 guys. Whereas obviously the Red Sox have Roman Anthony checking in at 3, Marcelo Meyer at 7, and Christian Campbell at 10. So like, we're talking about three top 10 prospects in the entire sport. And I tend to go off of Baseball America. I think that's probably the most reliable prospects.
Yeah. Like,
they have Roman Anthony at number 1. And I don't know if you listened to the Sox prospects pod with, I think it was Jeff Pontes from over at Baseball America, but he said he said that some people have Christian Campbell actually ahead of Roman Anthony as the top prospect in baseball.
Really?
Yeah. So it's interesting. Oh, wow. Yeah. It's interesting to look at it that way. Cause I mean, like we said, like, I do think that eventually it's going to come down to, where do you want to play?
Yeah.
And I don't, like, given the Red Sox history with Dominican stars, it's hard to imagine that that's not going to be a factor. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Like, Ortiz said it himself, that like, ultimately, like, the money does matter, but like, at a, like I said, at a certain point, like, looking at Pedro, Manny, Ortiz, now moving into Rafael Devers, like, I think it helps having a Spanish speaking manager and Alex Cora. Like, I think the Red Sox have a lot of things trending in their favor, and especially if, like, I mean, Soto's right around our age. If he grew up in the Dominican Republic, like, he was a Red Sox fan. He was watching Ortiz and Manny and Pedro dice up the Yankees. Like, I don't think that's what, like, obviously he just played for the Yankees, so, like, he doesn't have any issue with it. So, but I do think that it'll come down to, like, man, like, they're going to pay me $700 million and I get to have my number 22 hanging up right next to all my childhood heroes. Like, if I was the Red Sox, and like, if I'm dumb enough to come up with this idea and they didn't, then shame on them. At the end of whatever video presentation they showed him, if number 22 wasn't directly next to 34 up on that right field facade, they're like, they're the dumbest people on the planet. Cause like, again, how can I come up with that? And you're like, and you're Sam Kennedy sitting there being like, oh, what should we do? Like, that's the easiest possible thing ever, to just like, to have the end of the video be like, Ortiz, Manny, Martinez, Devers, Soto. Like, it's literally so simple to do something like that. But
yeah, that gets the juices flowing. And one more quick thing on the Mets is, especially this offseason, they have a lot of shit to worry about.
Yeah.
Like, Pete Alonso is a free agent. Sean Manaea is a free agent. Jose Quintana is also a free agent. So their roster is in a ton of turmoil. I think the Red Sox have moves to make, of course. They need a starter. They need a lot of bullpen help. But looking at the current state of both of these rosters, the Red Sox are much more set and solidified than the Mets are.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because I know the Mets have a lot of – or not a lot of pitching, but they have some pitching. Some of their top prospects are pitchers in the high minors, so I wonder if maybe they're just willing to get the comp pick on Sean Manaea and then let Jose Quintana walk and then slot Christian Scott and Brandon Sproat into those rotation spots and just see what you have. But they don't really have, like, a, like, frontline guy.
Yeah, like, Senga could be that guy. He's shown flashes of being that guy, but – last year it was just an injury riddled season.
Yeah. So I do think it's interesting to see where they go. I mean, I think their pitch is just going to be, do you want the most money?
Not much more to it than that.
Yeah. Like, I mean, if that report is true, Steve Cohen's just going to slap 50 mil on top of any offer. That's their entire pitch.
Yeah. Yeah. So I do appreciate the Red Sox, you know, looking at this sweepstakes and giving a kind of just full presentation on everything that they have. We'll see. I think I don't know. Like, talking about it does maybe move the meter for me a bit. I'm going to stay around that, like, 45-50%. Is there anything more you wanted to touch on with Soto?
He's common here.
I don't hate it. I don't hate the take. I'm just, I'm staying grounded like Tristan Casas until it happens, until I see that passing notification.
Yeah, it's actually, I just thought of another quick thing as you were saying that. I've seen a lot of people saying that it doesn't line up with like what the Red Sox philosophy is, but I go back to something that Heim said a couple years ago when talking about potentially extending Devers, that he was the exact kind of guy. And a lot of people say like, oh, they wouldn't even pay Mookie Betts. What makes you think they're going to give Juan Soto double that? Well, what Heim said there was, Devers is exactly the type of guy that we're willing to give these mega deals to. It's going to be the bulk of it's going to be in the prime of his career. Devers was, what, 26 when he signed that deal. Juan Soto's also 26 right now, signing a mega deal like that. These aren't guys who are like, Bogaerts was 31 when he signed his. Mookie was 29. So like, these are deals that are going to take these guys well into their, well past their prime and into their 40s. So you're getting more of the good years with these deals on guys like Soto. So it makes me feel like Vladdy next year too. Like, this was the plan all along, like, to target these guys that are hitting free agency earlier and giving them the mega deals, because then they don't look as bad on the back end.
Yeah, I like that too. And I also just think the state of the team was so, so much different than when they didn't re-sign Mookie and obviously traded him for, you know, a bag of chips. But at this point, I'm pretty moved on from Mookie and all that. Like, it's been, what, 5-6 years at this point? Or
yeah, this was year four. 4 years. This was his fourth year in Los Angeles. I don't know why I said Dallas.
you're good. But two World Series later with the Dodgers, I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
Obviously, I was pissed off when it happened. But to come out in 2024 and still be like, oh, the Red Sox are not signing Juan Soto because they wouldn't pay Mookie Betts 4 years ago, I just think is such an asinine way to think about it. Like, this is a very different roster. The prospect pool could not be more different. Like, who was our top prospect in 2020?
It was probably Casas.
Yeah, probably. I think
Like, the rest of them would have been, like, Michael Chavis, Bobby Dalbec.
Exactly.
A bunch of, like, no disrespect to Bobby Dalbec, who I love. But, like, I mean, for him to be the number three prospect in the organization is absolutely insane. Like, I mean, even, I'll just do a quick look at the 2020 top 100. The Red Sox, I would be surprised if they had even one top 100 prospect. Okay, they'd won. Yeah. Tristan Casas came in at 77.
Exactly my point.
Yeah, the rest of their list, their top prospects at the time was Jeter Downs, who they acquired for Mookie.
Mm-hmm.
They got let's just eliminate Jeter Downs. Number one, Tristan Casas. Number two, Bobby Dalbec. Number three, Brian Mata. Number four, Gilberto Jimenez, who is still in high A.
Mata hasn't developed much at all.
No, he's been hurt the entire time. And
yeah,
number five was a guy that disappeared to the Navy for a couple of years. Noah Song.
Yeah. And is he still with the organization too, right?
Yeah. He, I believe he went into double A last year.
Yeah.
That was weird. He got picked up by the Phillies returned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But all this to say that it could not be more different from 2020 to 2024. And the state of the team to be in a position to build and sign these big money deals. The time is now. I don't think anywhere in the near future, a player, especially at age 26, at Juan Soto's caliber will become available. And just that they're in it up to this point, that the smoke is as high as it is right now. It's an exciting time. And I don't know. We'll see what happens with all of that. I think we have like a couple other quick points. I kind of just read a bunch of articles this last week in preparation. The first one was from Jeff Passan, who really is the only national baseball reporter that I 100% trust. And what he said, this is a long quote that I took from here, so I'll just kind of spark notes it, but basically said the Red Sox can pretty much shore up all of their weaknesses this offseason. He says that they have about $75 million to spend before going to the first CBT. So obviously they can spend more than that. It comes down to whether they want to, whether they are in position to on a lot of these big money deals. But all I've seen this offseason is that the Red Sox are ready to commit to the long-term plan, to commit to building around these young prospects and the players that they already have at the major league level. And we didn't even touch on this yet, but the embarrassment of riches that they have, it seems like a lot of the national reporters think that a trade is coming as well. And there are a bunch of names that have been floated. They're obviously Garrett Crochet and Devin Williams. Also, just a quick thing. I believe it was Nightingale who said that the Brewers aren't shopping him anymore.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But I think at the trade deadline, he's pretty much gone.
Yeah, the market for relievers at the deadline is always so much higher than it is right in the offseason anyways. So, if I'm high, I'm in the Cardinals, I'm hanging on to Helsley until the deadline. Mm-hmm. The Red Sox need a closer. So, I'm hoping that Heim just says, you know what, there's a guy in the Red Sox farm system that I just gotta have. I'm willing to do it. I mean, we'll get into the Arenado stuff, but there's a path to grouping those together to make a bigger package. It's interesting. I'm not really all that surprised that I was surprised that Devin Williams was even going to be available at the beginning of the offseason. So,
yeah, I agree with that. I think we talked about it last episode that the Brewers were messing with his player options and arbitration.
Yeah. They declined his club option for $10 million because his arbitration figure was going to be lower than that number. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is basically all you need to do to get a player to hate your guts and not want to re-sign you. So, yeah. I think he's all but gone come trade deadline season.
And we've seen the Brewers do stuff like this before, too, with Corbin Burns. Burns was very open about how much he resented the Brewers for talking shit about him in that arbitration hearing, and then he was gone. So
Right. Yeah, they traded him last offseason, and that was only a one-year deal. Now he's obviously a free agent. So the haul for Devin Williams, it could be higher, but you only in – oh, sorry. I just had a brain fart. But Devin Williams, come trade deadline season, the haul will probably be bigger than it would be in this offseason, but you're only trading for less than half a season of him. So,
yeah, I think the dream is that Tanner Scott return.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They got Robbie Snelling, Adam Mazur, and Graham Pauly, and Snelling and Mazur. Mazur got some reps in the big leagues this year, and Snelling was one of their top pitching prospects. So
yeah,
that's what you're dreaming on when you're holding him to the deadline.
Yeah, and that's entirely possible, especially for a closer of Devin Williams' caliber. I also think the Red Sox would be in a position to do that if they needed to. But I would say the main goal is just to shore up the bullpen now. And if you need to trade for some more supplemental pieces at the deadline, you can trade some lower level prospects to do that. So the other kind of national article that I found on this was from Bob Nightingale, who I don't trust as much, but, is still a reliable source. This is kind of outdated now because he did mention that the Red Sox want to sign two of Burns, Snell, or Fried. Obviously, at this point, Blake Snell is signed with the Dodgers, so really comes down to Corbin Burns and Max Fried. Where are you at with this? Do you think there is any real possibility that both Burns and Fried come here, or is it more just one or the other?
At this point, now that Snell's off the board, I kind of think that it's one or the other, and then the other addition is going to come via trade, which, some of these new reports coming out of Chicago are just absolutely asinine about Garrett Crochet. So, I don't even necessarily know if he's the guy. I know that there's, we keep coming back to the Mariners, and as they, they seem to be this, almost perfect fit for a trade. Like, I don't know. Like, I think it was Rosenthal who said that the Red Sox liked Brian Wu and were willing to deal Casas for him. Like, to me, that is just fucking ridiculous. Brian Wu, I like Brian Wu. I'm a Brian Wu guy.
Yeah, he's fine.
He leaves every single game in the fourth inning with like some sort of like elbow soreness, forearm tightness. Like, and I know this for absolute certain because I have him on my dynasty team. So every single start I put him in, I'm like, all right, here we go, Brian Wu Day. And then I go to look and it's like, what, he only pitched 3 2/3? Like, what the hell happened? And it's always some bullshit like that. Like, so if Casas is the price for Brian Wu, I'm telling Jerry DePoto to go take a hike, because that is ridiculous.
And not to mention with the Mariners, I'm pretty sure it was Passan who mentioned that their front office is more content just making these sort of half measures every offseason rather than making a big splash and trading from their embarrassment of pitching riches over there. I don't understand it from just a baseball standpoint as a whole. Like, you have you pretty much have a whole rotation of young arms plus Luis Castillo. And you have absolutely no offense whatsoever. I don't know if it will be with the Red Sox, but if they don't make a trade this offseason, or maybe trade deadline season, maybe next offseason, then their window, albeit their window is really not open at the moment, just based on the state of their team. But the only way to open that window is to move one of these pitchers for a bat or...
It's so weird because they made the playoffs for the first time in 20 years.
Yeah.
Two years ago.
Yeah.
And obviously last year they blew a double digit game lead in the AL West, albeit that was still early. So like anything could happen, but like to have a double digit lead in the division and not even be close to making the playoffs is really something. And I know the argument is that they play in the most pitcher friendly park in the league, so it's beneficial for them to have a stable of awesome pitchers, which they do. But like, also, like, you have to score runs. Like, I mean, I watch the Bruins every single year, and I say it time and time again, you're not going to win every hockey game 1-0. You're not going to win every baseball game 1 or 2-0, and they just can't generate runs. Like, they went out there, they traded for Rosarena, they have Julio Rodriguez locked down, and then, like, what else do they have?
Nothing. Like, they have Harry Ford.
Yeah, J.P. Crawford's all right. Like, Harry Ford is still only 20, and we know that catchers take longer to develop. Like, I love Cal Raleigh, and he has the best nickname in the game. But, like, at some point, something has got to give, and there's no reason not to get a massive haul of hitters from a team like the Red Sox or even any of these other teams, like even the Dodgers. Like, as ridiculous as it is to use them as an example because their rotation is already about as nasty as they come, like, there's no reason for them not to go out there and make a move for a big bat. And for whatever reason, they just seem hell-bent on not doing it, which makes no sense to me. But it seems like their ownership group doesn't really care, because it doesn't seem like there's any sort of pressure on DePoto.
No. And it's been like that for, like, pretty much since all these pitching prospects have been called up and have been dominant. And their offense hasn't improved at all, pretty much. They've tried signing Polanco. I think he was trading for Polanco last year. But even that, they
traded back for Eugenio Suarez.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think they traded for Teoscar Hernandez before he was a free agent last year as well. But that didn't really pan out either. I just don't see the Mariners being, like, even listening to some of those deals, which makes no sense to me. I think we could talk about that for a while. But it doesn't seem like they're going to budge on anything at the moment. But some other trades that have been floated are on the hitter side. Have you seen all the weird rumors about a potential Nolan Arenado trade?
Yeah, I've gone back and forth, because I think a lot of people think that means Casas is out the door. And I could not be more, if anyone listening hasn't gotten the picture yet, I could not be more wholeheartedly against trading Tristan Casas. Not only is he my favorite player on the current roster, he, I think, has one of the higher ceilings on the current roster. I mean, this is a guy that was, when he was coming up, he was getting Freddie Freeman and Joey Votto comps in terms of his plate approach. And obviously, last year, he missed most of the year with that, was it rib cartilage contusion or whatever? It was something in the rib cartilage, but missed 4 months. So now, like, you're talking about trading a guy at his lowest value. And, like, it seems like every single report that comes out is just like, oh, yeah, the Red Sox aren't thrilled with Casas because he's a little weird. Like, and people latch on to, like, if I see one more, like, 40 to 50 year old man on Twitter be like, yeah, dude, they gotta get rid of Casas. He paints his fucking nails. Like, who gives a shit? Like, who cares? And it, the Casas stuff, just, I could go talk about being able to go on and on about trading Casas forever. But all that to say, I don't understand why they don't just move Devers to DH. Like, to just assume.
I know.
We, this is an organization that trotted Franchy Cordero out there at first base. And we're like, all right, go ahead. And it was a fucking catastrophe. So now we're talking about taking a guy who absolutely stinks on defense and just trotting him out there to first base. Like, you think Devers is going to be able to pick the ball? Like, absolutely not. Like, when you're talking about improving your infield defense, the answer is not moving Devers to first base. Like, Casas, I don't think has lit the world on fire with his defense by any stretch. I think he got a lot better last year than where he was at his rookie year, but he at least knows how to play the position. Like, Devers has never played the position, and he's already a mess defensively. Like, and I, to that point, like, we've seen him get in his own head, and he no longer has that Xander Bogaerts to go back into the dugout and throw his arm around him to be like, hey, man, like, it's fine. Like, we're moving on. You made the mistake. Like, like, next play. Like, so what happens? He, and especially if Story gets hurt again and we have to go through the clown car of idiots at shortstop again, like, what happens if David Hamilton skips a ball and Devers doesn't pick it and it scoots away? And then the same play, like, the ball tends to find people who are making mistakes multiple times over and over again. So, like, ball gets hit to shortstop again. David Hamilton skips one. Devers is in his own head. Can't pick it again. Now, all of a sudden, we're talking about compounding mistakes. Like, to me, it just doesn't make sense. If you're getting Nolan Arenado to improve your infield defense, you're like, all right, we're going to get Arenado and move Devers to first base. Like, your defense is just making a lateral move. Like, sure, you have this multi-time platinum glover at third base, but now you have a guy that can't pick the ball at first. So,
No, I agree with all those points. I think the only place I would put Rafael Devers at first base is on my MLB The Show Diamond Dynasty team. Like, I understand that maybe Devers would be a little pissed off if at this point in his career, where he's still pretty young, they already want to move him to a full-time DH. But then the argument becomes, look at all of the history of DHs that the Red Sox have had. Every single World Series team has had an all-star DH. It was JD Martinez in 2018, and then it was David Ortiz before that.
Yeah, and I mean, to steal a quote from Cam Neely, Rafael Devers has 313 and a half million reasons why he shouldn't give a shit about being moved to DH.
Exactly, exactly. And if you put in Arenado, I don't hate it. I don't love it for the prospects and the pieces that are rumored to be in play.
I was going to say, I'm not giving up a prospect for Nolan Arenado.
No. I've seen maybe like Masataka Yoshida, like, just kind of flipping contracts that you want to get rid of. But I don't think a Yoshida is going to get that deal done alone. If you
I feel like a lot of that is just like, oh, Haim loved Yoshida. Like, he must still love him. Like, I don't know that we can take
I don't buy that.
Yeah.
No.
And like, especially when he knows the farm system that well, like, I feel like he's going to try to take the Red Sox for a ride on a deal.
Yeah. Like, if anyone is trading, if we're trading for anyone on the Cardinals. Oh, are we good?
Yeah, we're good. We're back.
Okay. If I'm trading for anybody on the Cardinals, I think it would be Helsley, and I don't see them moving him right now either. But aside from that, I just, like, I don't know. To me, it creates a problem that you don't need to have, especially if moving Devers off third is going to piss him off, then I don't know. I think there are other ways to improve the infield defense, and bringing in Arenado would be cool because he's probably going to be like a 6-9 hitter and having some more production at the bottom of the lineup is always good. It kind of just depends what they give up for him and how Devers feels about it.
Yeah, to me, I don't necessarily, like I said, I don't know that Haim is jumping at the bit to get Masataka Yoshida to St. Louis, but if you can find a deal for Yoshida and you're comfortable, willing, like, again, I don't care about pissing off Devers for a week. Like,
yeah, he'll get over it.
Like, yeah, again, he's making $313.5 million for the rest of his career. Like, he can do whatever he should do whatever the team tells him to do, because that's what they're paying him to do. So to me, like, the only, if they can find something to do with Yoshida, like, I'm pretty against just DFAing him, because if you just DFA him to bring in Arenado, then you're talking about paying Arenado like 30 something million.
Right.
For all things considered, which, like, I'm just not comfortable doing. Yeah. But if you can find a taker for Yoshida, and it's like one of those deals where it's like, okay, how about this? We'll take on all of Arenado's money and you're going to give us Ryan Helsley for a lesser package. Like, I think
that'd be cool.
That's something that makes way more sense to me than just like automatically assuming that Yoshida for Arenado is a 1-for-1 swap that is just going to automatically get done, like people are saying.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think it really, I think there are much more pressing problems than making a change at third base at this point. You know, if an Arenado trade would happen, I would expect a lot of supplemental moves after the fact, or for an Arenado trade to come later this offseason.
Yeah, absolutely. Do we want to keep talking about third base and the Devers conundrum with some of these other reports that have come out?
What you got?
Bregman stuff, Adames stuff. Like, I guess you can pick your poison on which one of those two guys you want to dive into.
Yeah, I honestly didn't do a full deep dive into Bregman or Adames. I don't really see either of them coming here.
That Bregman report that he wants like a deal similar to what Machado got. Like,
I don't buy that.
All the best of luck to you, Alex Bregman, looking for that deal. I mean, I don't want him on what the original reported numbers were going to be. So let alone something that is going to take him well into his 40s. Like, I'm all set on that one. Adames is a little bit more interesting because of his versatility in the infield. Like,
right.
Obviously, you could slide him to second base if need be. If Story goes down, you can move him to short. Like, I think the plan would be to play him at third, but it just brings us back to this whole conversation that we just had. Like, where does the roster fall into place after that? Like, it just feels like that is like, that's move A in a, like, 4-5 part plan that I just don't necessarily know that they're looking to do right now, given it seems like all of their energy is focused in on those three Boris clients of Soto, Burns, and Fried. I guess Bregman's also a Boris guy, but
yeah, I think if they were to sign an Adames or a Bregman, it would come after Soto, Fried, and Burns have already signed, whether that be here or elsewhere. I do like Adames more just because of what you mentioned, the versatility there, because Story playing 162 games is, there's no shot of that.
Yeah,
but also just extreme. Like playing even over like 120 at this point is not a pipe dream, but definitely not a given.
It would feel like a major victory if he played 120 games next year.
Exactly. But I'm not banking on that. And you do have the prospects who you could call up, a Christian Campbell. He could play second base. I would rather have second base solidified by a young guy rather than continuing to just kind of patch it together like they have been for the past,
since Pedroia got hurt.
Exactly. Yeah. Like 6-7 years at this point, maybe even more than that. But if you have the option to put Adames in one of those spots and maybe just give other guys a breather, I don't hate that. I guess it depends on the years and the dollars there. Do you know what they've been floating with him?
I'll pull up the MLB trade rumors predictions right now. It was probably somewhere around 7 and 180, 200, if I had to guess, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, like to me, the offense is fine right now. I think you could benefit from a little bit more production in the bottom half of the lineup, but I don't know. To me, like, pitching is really the top priority this offseason. whether or not you sign Juan Soto, you're still going to need one or two arms in that rotation. I don't want to patch together another rotation of guys who probably should be in the bullpen.
Yeah. The Adames contract, MLB mm-hmm. trade rumors had him getting 6 years at 160.
Okay, yeah. That to me, that's not a big deal at this point. No. I think a while ago, if you were like, Willy Adames is making $160 million, people would scoff at that and never give it to him. At this point, that kind of feels like an underpay. Didn't he hit 30-plus homers last year? He probably did years prior to that as well. So, I mean, this is a productive hitter. He's had consistent success. I wouldn't worry so much about that anymore. I don't hate the idea of that. I like that a hell of a lot more than Bregman, who can just play third.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I would say focus on the arms, focus on Soto until that ends, whether he comes here or not. I think the pursuit needs to be focused on those top three Boris guys, like we touched on. The other thing on pitching real quick was that Pivetta declined the qualifying offer, which I think we both kind of expected.
Yeah. That's a good business by Craig Breslow there.
Yeah.
I was shocked when they gave him that QO. Mm-hmm. And then obviously Passan came out in that offseason primer saying that he expected Pivetta to decline it and that he was actually going to be one of the more sought after, like, second-tier pitchers, which really surprised me. And I know that Lou Maloney was like, I don't necessarily buy what Passan's saying there, but, like,
right.
Credit to Craig Breslow. He read the mm-hmm. market completely perfectly on that. And now they're going to – I mean, I could see them maybe pivoting back to bringing Pivetta back if things go horribly wrong this offseason. Right. But in all likelihood, you're going to end up getting a second round pick or a pick at the end of the second round for Nick mm-hmm. Pivetta, which, like, just for if people don't know, like, two comp picks that they've gotten in the past are Roman Anthony and Christian Campbell. And both of those guys are pretty good. So,
yeah, pretty good. Yeah, no, I agree with that. And yeah, it's kind of just a failsafe at this point. Like, If you swing and miss on the top big starter free agents and Pivetta's still around, like, you can sign him for a much cheaper deal than maybe people are anticipating that he's going to get. I really don't know what team is going to give him that 3 for $60 or even plus that $60 million.
Yeah, it hasn't it felt like there hasn't even been any reports about him. I mean, I think part of that is that, like, everyone's just so focused in on Snell, who's obviously off mm-hmm. the board now, but Fried and Burns now. Like, once those two guys are now off the board, all of the losers of those sweepstakes are going to now pivot towards some of those guys that got the QO, the Manaias, mm-hmm. Pivettas of the world, guys like that.
Yeah. And that would take a lot longer to develop, like you said. So I don't imagine he signs until probably late December, maybe similar to a Giolito type timeline. But I think we're also forgetting about Giolito a bit there too, is obviously you can't bank on his production, but he is an arm that they're going to put into their rotation pretty much no matter what. And if you bring in a starter or two, I think even without Pivetta, they'll be fine.
Well, that's why I'll use that to springboard some of the Shane Bieber talks that we've seen. Mm-hmm. They've at least checked in on Bieber. I think maybe Bieber is, we've seen them do these type of reclamation projects with James Paxton. Right. I mean, obviously Giolito didn't come in as a, like, full blown reclamation project. He was coming in off a down year and then his elbow exploded. So like, obviously he had that player option, which was, again, the easiest player option to decision made probably this entire offseason. But Bieber makes sense to me because he's not going to be in your rotation on opening day. He's probably going to miss at least half the year. Mm-hmm. By the time he's back and, like, fully ramped up, there's a good chance that just kind of figures itself out. You're going to have other mm-hmm. rotation injuries. You're going to have guys who aren't performing well. Like, even trades could open up some spots. And then Giolito's done after this year. So if you're taking Bieber on say, I mean, obviously you're not doing a 1 year deal with Shane Bieber or anything like mm-hmm. that, but if you can get him on a deal similar to, obviously more money, but, like, similar to what Paxton signed a couple of years ago, or, like, probably closer to what Giolito got last offseason, mm-hmm. then you can slot him in wherever you need him in the middle of next year. And then going into the 26 season, you can just slot him right into your rotation on a 1 year deal.
Yeah, I don't hate that at all. I also think that it could be very similar to a Giolito contract, like you said. And also, he's won a Cy Young in the past. Like, and he also was pitching very well before he got hurt last year. And I think the only worry there, and maybe fans feel the same way about this, is that cannot be your only move. That was pretty much their only big move last year. And that would be the only sort of worry I have with a Shane Bieber contract. And to me, I'm not even really worried about that being their only move this offseason. I think it's just something on the radar that if they were to have to pivot, if they miss out on Fried and Burns, to pivot to just a Shane Bieber contract gets pretty much nothing done in the near future, because he's not going to pitch, like we said, until at least halfway through the year.
Yeah, that would be, I know Red Sox Stats tweeted it, that like every pivot plan he's hearing from some of these top guys are absolutely horrifying.
Yeah.
And like that is by far my biggest concern of this offseason, where Henry and ownership has heard fans scream and bitch and moan for the last however many years, you're cheap, you don't spend any money, like you don't care about the Red Sox anymore. And he's going to just say, oh, I don't care about the Red Sox anymore. Here's Alex Bregman. Here's Shane Bieber. And like just on some absolutely atrocious contracts and like completely handcuff the team for the next however many years. Like we can't have this offseason turn into a Pablo and Hanley 2.0, because I mean, like we saw, it set the organization back however many years. And like, those are two guys that you ultimately just DFA'd and ate the money, which is just a catastrophic scenario.
Yeah. I wouldn't hate a Bieber contract. I just need some more than just a Bieber contract.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's unfair to lump Bieber into that kind of nightmare scenario group. Like,
right.
But if he's the only pitcher that they get, like, I mean, I know we talked on the last episode about getting Crochet. It has to come with a guy with a higher floor to kind of offset some of that risk that comes with Crochet. Like, Bieber's not that guy. So like, if they just say like, oh, we traded for Garrett Crochet and signed Shane Bieber, it's like, okay, well, like, yeah, like, sure, Crochet has really incredible upside, but like, there's also no floor for when he's like exactly. Are you handing Garrett Crochet the ball on the fifth day when you have a 4-game losing streak, saying like, this is our stopper, like, this is our guy? No. Like, sure, he can develop into that, but you're not.
Mm-mm, no. And that's the thing, is if they miss out on all these, if they miss out on both Burns and Fried, I don't know really what else they do with the rotation. Like, you can sign a Bieber, you can acquire a Garrett Crochet, but you kind of have to. Like, it's not just they're able to and they have the money to. You don't have another choice if you want to win this year.
No, and that's why I kind of think they might just pivot back to Pivetta, because with Pivetta, you like, obviously, like, you could go after like a Sean Manaea, who had a career resurgence, but I would rather just like not get the comp pick for bringing back Pivetta than give up a pick to sign Sean Manaea. Like,
I agree.
The devil you know is better than the one you don't.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know how old Sean Manaea is. I feel like he's been around for a while, but I imagine he's, if not the same age, then older than Nick Pivetta. So that's just another sort of caveat.
Sean Manaea is 32.
Okay, yeah. And I think Pivetta is either 30 or 31.
He's 31.
So, okay, yeah. So I guess doesn't really matter. But yeah, like you said, you know what you have in Pivetta. Is there anything more we want to touch on with free agency in general?
You want to talk about the Blake Snell signing?
Yeah, yeah. So that was kind of the last point we had here, was Blake Snell earlier this week. I think, was it Tuesday or?
Yes, Tuesday night.
Yeah. So Tuesday night, Blake Snell, before any other baseball reporter has it, he just throws it on his Instagram.
He just casually posted a picture of him in the Dodgers uniform.
Yeah, yeah. And then it took a little while for the baseball reporters to pick it up. Like, I don't know if they were like trying to confirm, maybe, I don't know, maybe he got hacked, but obviously, of course, now he didn't get hacked. But for a little while there, you were like, what is going on here? Like, yeah, I see he posted a Photoshop of him in a Dodgers uniform, but none of the big reporters were confirming it. And then it comes out, yeah, Blake Snell signs a 5-year, $182 million contract with the Los Angeles Dodgers. And there were really no reports of this beforehand. Like, I know they mentioned that Blake Snell was linked to the Red Sox.
They met with him, too. I think the two teams he met with were the Dodgers and Red Sox.
Oh, okay. Okay, I guess I missed that. But, yeah, he signed very early this offseason. I guess it makes sense because he signed in, like, late March last year.
Yeah, he was very vocal about how not having a normal spring training really fucked with him. And I mean, he spent the first half, talk about another guy that's on my dynasty baseball team. He was injured for most of the first half of last year. Mm-hmm. And then when he finally got fully healthy and fully ramped up, he was one of the best pitchers in baseball. I mean, the strikeout rate was through the roof. He's taken Chris Sale's title as the all time K per nine leader. So he's, so that's something. I mean, like, obviously it's not that big of a deal to have like the little gold thing on your baseball reference page, but the stat is, it's a good stat to have. Yeah. Highest K per nine of all time. So I think he was like, he was pretty dead set on signing pretty early. And like, I mean, it also helps when we know he prefers to be on the West Coast. Like, he's from Washington. And, I just think once the Dodgers came in and said 5 years, which is going to take him through his age 32 season for $22 million higher than what his MLB trade rumors prediction was. I just think he was like, well, like, this seems like the easiest deal for me to sign. Like, they're giving me fair money. And like, I know Twitter kind of melted down about it. We're like, oh, baseball needs a salary cap. Like, I think that's just absolutely fucking ridiculous. Like, you people need to be looking at your owners and your teams rather than looking at the league as a whole. Like, the league is like, to absolutely punish the players because the owners cry poor every year. I mean, we've seen it with John Henry in FSG for the last however many years of them crying poor. Like, I think Red Sox fans are good about not being like, oh, this is ridiculous. Like, the Dodgers just defer everything. Like, sure, like, they do, but like, I don't know. Like, and we've been mad at John Henry for all these years. Like, no one's like crying, being like, oh, they need to lower the salary, or like, they need to implement a salary cap. I mean, not to mention that, like, I've used this comp when people talk about positional caps in football, like, quarterbacks can only make X amount of dollars. If baseball were to ever implement a salary cap, then all these teams who already have signed these massive big money deals are going to throw an absolute fit. Like, what do you think the Dodgers, like, the Dodgers, Red Sox, and Yankees, even the Mets, like, alone, those owners and those clubs probably have enough pull to completely shut down any type of salary cap talk, like, the second that it gets started. Like,
it's funny you bring that up, because in one of my classes in college, I actually, we were like planning our own radio show. It's basically just a class on podcasting pretty much. And we had to come up with like a big issue to discuss for a majority of our episode. So what I did was brought up the discussion of whether or not MLB should have a salary cap. And there are arguments on both sides. To me, it's at this point, like you said, all of these owners are billionaires. If they all wanted to contribute the same amount of money as the Dodgers, they have more than enough to do it. And so that kind of transitions into my next point, is the state of free agency now. You have to overpay these players to have any real legitimate chance of signing them. Do I really think Juan Soto is worth $700 million, the same amount of money that Shohei Ohtani is making when he can pitch and hit? I don't know. I really don't.
It's a different argument. It's an interesting conversation for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I guess that's not really the point of what I just brought up, but I will say, I think $700 million for Juan Soto is a bit of an overpay, especially throughout the offseason. Like, even $600 million was kind of the top of what people think he was going to make. Now we're past that point. I think it's going to be well into the 600s. I don't know if they'll reach $700 million, but regardless, to me, that feels like an overpay, especially because that's not what the majority of reporters were thinking he was going to make. And like you said, what the Snell contract was well over what he was projected to make as well. So,
yeah, and I think that's true across all sports. I mean, I know I've crossed sports a lot in this podcast, but like, just use the Bruins as an example. Like, they needed a first line center, and Elias Lindholm was the best center on the free agent market. They gave him 7 years and like $8 million AAV or whatever it was. I think that's an overpay for Elias Lindholm, but he was the best center on the market. You need a top line center. Like, is he exactly what you're looking for? Probably not. But when you can't develop, I mean, it's hard to say like, oh, you can't develop a guy like Juan Soto or Shohei Ohtani, because like these are true once in a lifetime players. But when guys like that hit the open market, you just, you have to pay what it is to get them. Like, you have a need and you got to fill it. Like, it is interesting, like, to me, however, what, just 4 years ago, we were talking about Mookie Betts getting like $360 million, being like, oh my God. And now we're talking about Ohtani and Soto getting 700 maybe. Like, I know, like I said, those are two like true unicorn once in a generation type players. Like, I think if, I think if Juan Soto retired tomorrow, he would walk into Cooperstown blindfolded. And I mean, obviously same can be said for Ohtani. So like, I mean, these are like slam dunk superstars. So like, I don't necessarily think that those deals are going to continue to be like, I don't think whoever the top bats next free agency are going to be looking at $600 million, but it is crazy how much it balloons. Like, and like you said, like, that's just the cost of doing business. When all 30 teams have a chance to bid for your services, like, obviously things are going to get out of control. And especially when you consider the suitors in this Soto argument, I mean, you're talking about the Red Sox, the Mets, and the Yankees. Like, the Yankees are rivals with two of those teams. And like, obviously the Red Sox and Mets have a history. Like, I'm not obviously as deep, but obviously it goes back to that 86 World Series. Like, you're talking about a bunch of teams that like, for the most part, don't like each other. So like, if I'm the Red Sox, like, I'm getting into a bidding war with the Mets, but like, I'm just making sure the Yankees price themselves out of it. Like, if it comes down to the Yankees have hit their number and they're not willing to go beyond it, I throw like the old Michael Scott office auction, where it's like $477 million in one penny. Like, I'm just doing that until the Yankees are out of it. And then if ultimately you end up like jacking up the price on the Mets, who gives a shit?
Yeah, no. And that, it's so strange to think about now. We're at a point where the Yankees can be outbid for a player. Like, before, I think in really, up until like maybe 10 years ago now, like, the Yankees were the only ones who were willing to shell out that kind of money. And obviously it was on a lesser scale. Like, I think the Alex Rodriguez contract was like, what, 200 something million?
Something like that. That's
the exact number. I mean, obviously it's in a different stratosphere now, the kind of money that these players can make. But it seems like owners are starting to kind of get it more on a larger scale. And obviously it's still less than half of the league that is willing to do this. But even you have the Phillies, you have the Padres, who every year they're not in the conversation for every top free agent, but they are willing to make big splashes. Obviously they were the ones who ultimately got Machado and Bryce Harper on both $300 million deals. And they tend to be in on others. I don't know if the Padres will change now, because they're kind of in big shit with all their big deals nowadays.
Yeah, and it feels like they kind of were just going all in because they knew that their owner was on the way out. Obviously, he passed away before last season, so like, it felt like they were just kind of going to get him a ring. But like, it's funny that you mention him, because I actually hadn't thought of this until you just did. But like, that is the Padres offseason where they end up with Bogarts on that 11-year deal. That's like as bad as things could get for the Red Sox. Like, passing called that Bogarts contract one of the worst in baseball after 1 year.
And
obviously everybody bitches and moans that the Red Sox didn't sign Bogarts, and like, it's easy to be like, oh, the Red Sox are cheap, they didn't sign Bogarts. If they gave Bogarts, if they matched that contract, I would have been absolutely furious. Like, there's no way that's the guy that we're like, at that, like, then you would actually have the argument of, Oh, you're willing to give Xander Bogaerts 11 years, $290 million, but you won't give Mookie Betts 12 and 330? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. then you actually have that argument. Not, it's not the same as saying, oh, you'll give Juan Soto this. Like, if they, like, that's as bad as things could get for this offseason. Like, if they give Alex Bregman a deal like, that seems mm-hmm. like a comp. Like, that yeah. would be a nightmare.
And obviously, hindsight's 20/20 with those, because at the time, I think most fans were just pissed off that we didn't retain those guys. I think Mookie, I would have paid that contract 100 times over.
Yeah.
But Bogaerts, yeah, that was a hell of an overpay, especially he's going to be 40, 41 by the time that deal ends, and he's already dropped off in terms of production.
Yeah, so, like you said, you would give Mookie, I agree with you. I'd give Mookie that contract 100 times out of 100. I would give Xander Bogaerts that contract 0 times out of 100.
Exactly. Exactly. And I, of course, Bogaerts and Soto are not in the same conversation in terms of quality of player, but it is a little bit of a concern to be like, we're going to commit $700 million to one player, and it doesn't seem like any of that money is going to be deferred like the Otani contract. No. So it does mess with your finances a lot. And obviously, I know that the competitive threshold does go up, but 50 million plus committed to one guy does make it a bit tougher to make more supplemental moves, especially when you don't have a lot of other big deals to sort of move around.
Yeah, I do wonder what it looks like in terms of trying to work deals out with some of these prospects that you do plan on keeping. Like,
right.
do we see a Jackson Chourio type deal with Roman Anthony or something mm-hmm. like that, just to kind of play around with the money a little bit more? I mean, we mm-hmm. saw it with Bayo, and for some reason, Rafaela got extended. It just kind of felt yeah. like they were like, all right, who wants to get extended? And Rafaela yeah. was like, oh, I do. They're like, cool. And they gave him that extension. So, I yeah. mean, at the bare minimum, you're talking about going over this, at least this first threshold, if you do get Juan Soto for probably mm-hmm. at least the next 5 years.
Yeah.
If
yeah.
not longer, because then it depends on, like, obviously how some of these prospects pan out. But, like, if you already have these two mega deals with Soto and Devers on your payroll, that in Roman Anthony turns out to be a stud, like, perennial mm-hmm. all-star, like, I think he's going to be an MVP caliber type of player. So if he does mm-hmm. turn into that player, like, I'd be just as mad if they let him walk out the door. Like, we're already paying these guys. Like, what's the, like who cares? We're already going over the luxury tax. And it's easy to say who cares, because it's not my money.
Yeah.
But, like, there's no point in signing Juan Soto to a 13-year deal if by year four you're going to be like, oh, well, we got to reset the luxury tax number. Like,
yeah.
Like, at that point, like, again, who cares? Like, there's no point in having that $50 million a year AAV going to your luxury tax if you're not committed to going over for at least the next half decade, maybe longer.
Right, right. And it goes back to them resetting their CBT when they got rid of Mookie. I don't know if they forecasted a move like this from where they were at that point, but all signs now with the young prospects that they have, with the money they have to play with this offseason, and all of the smoke that I've heard, is that they don't really care about that anymore. And obviously that remains to be seen. But all the indications I've seen are pretty good.
It does. I know I mentioned earlier, it does kind of seem like they've been kind of lining up for one of these two free agent classes mm-hmm. to make a big splash this year with Soto or next year with Vladdy. I mean, we know, but like, I'm pretty dead set on getting Soto right now. I know a lot of people on Red Sox Twitter just like, all right, sign Soto, trade for Vladdy, and now we go. Well, it's like, well, you still have yeah. to commit to paying Vladdy, which, like, I know I just said, like, if you already have those two mega deals, what's a third? And if they were mm-hmm. going to, I don't think the Red Sox are trading what it's going to take to get Vladdy from an inner division rival and
probably
then
not
let him walk a year later. So, and obviously, we know he mashes at Fenway, which would be awesome. But I completely lost my train of thought there.
No, you're good. I did have a thought on that, too, was, If you want Vladdy, I feel like you can just wait until next offseason.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's exactly, that got me right back onto my train of thought. It does feel like with what they've been saying with, like, these are the guys that we want to target for these mega deals, that they've had these couple of guys circled for since they made that comment, because obviously you can path out when guys are going to hit free agency. And I think maybe Tatis was another guy before he did sign that extension with the Padres. But all those guys were coming up on free agency right around this year and next. So I think maybe when they were making those comments, they were kind of like giving you a hint like, hey, guys, like, I know we're not going after like Aaron Judge or like a bad example, but like Shohei Ohtani or any of those guys. But we do have guys that we're looking at in future years. Like, I know Coley said this a bunch on the 10, but this isn't the last free agent class. Like, there's going to be more. And like, and that was true however many years ago when they weren't signing guys and they weren't spending all this money and people were getting pissed off, but they were saying we have a plan. Like, they knew that there were going to be more free agencies, and you can map out when guys are going to hit free agency so easily just by basic arithmetic can tell you when guys are going to hit free agency. So like, it's easy to like jump to like, oh my God, they're poor, this is a catastrophe. And I did the same thing. I'm guilty of it. I hated these last however many years, but it does feel like it's different. Like it's just, I hope they stick to that plan of these are the guys we want to give these like long-term 10 plus year deals to, because I would really hate for it to turn into a situation like we had with the, like we saw with the Padres. I just mentioned it. They wanted Aaron Judge. They got turned away. They wanted Trey Turner. They got turned away. Like I think there was a third name that they wanted, but they got turned away. And essentially they were like, well, we've already planned on spending this 11 years, 200 and whatever plus million dollars. How about Xander Bogaerts? And it turns into an absolute albatross after year one.
Exactly. Exactly. And one quick point I thought about when you were talking about all that was, it, looking back on past free agency classes, is there any name that the Red Sox missed out on that you're like still pissed off that they didn't sign?
I mean, obviously Ohtani would have been sick.
But none that, I guess,
I'm not still pissed about Teoscar. What will piss me off about not getting Teoscar is if they go ahead and miss out on Soto and then immediately pivot to him, give him way more years, way more money, and give up the comp pick when you could have just had him last year. Like that will absolutely drive me insane.
Yeah, I agree with that. But like looking at the starting pitching that they missed out on the past few years, I'm not like still annoyed that they didn't get a Blake Snell or a Jordan Montgomery last year. I'm not really worried about like, oh, they didn't sign Verlander or Scherzer, who were old as fuck. Like, well, I feel like this free agency class is so different than the other ones, and maybe I'm just blanking on a lot of big names that went, that moved in past off seasons, but there's still a lot of names out there. Blake Snell is obviously off the board. There's still a lot of opportunity to improve here. And I think this is the big offseason where if they don't sign any of these guys, that's where I'm really annoyed for the future.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right there. I mean, it seems like this year there's been more smoke than any other year in years past. I mean, maybe I'm just living in the moment right now and I'm forgetting in years past. Like, I think maybe like you can make the argument they should have more aggressively pursued Snell last season, seeing it's a guy that you're interested in now. But like at the end of the day, it seems like he has a real, real preference to playing on the West Coast. And it feels like maybe it would have been even more expensive than the 5 and 182 for him to come back to the East Coast and pitch for the Red Sox.
Yeah. And I'm kind of all set on that. Like the 5 for 182, like I don't love it.
I do wonder how much more they had to add in order to get him to agree to those deferrals.
True, true. Yeah, because that is another factor in this is I don't definitely not with Soto, which we've touched on already, but with Burns and Fried, too. I don't know how much deferred money is going to come into play here.
Yeah, I can't imagine a whole lot, but I mean, I guess who knows with the new landscape. It does feel like the deferred money is the new wave now.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll really have to see how much it comes into play these next couple years, but it feels like the Dodgers are the only ones really taking advantage of it right now.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's all I have on free agency and that sort of thing. Did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, I don't think so. I think we did a pretty good job summing everything up. Touched on Snell, got into the Soto stuff. I mean, obviously, it was a lot of Soto talk, but like when you have like what, like, conservatively speaking, he's a top three player in the sport.
Oh, yeah.
When you have that type of guy linked to your team, like, obviously you're going to spend most of the time talking about that. And it feels like maybe the next time that we get on here is going to be an emergency podcast because Juan Soto's a Red Sox.
Yeah.
Well, that feels like, but that's my prediction.
I wouldn't care where I am. I'm opening my laptop, signing into StreamYard, and we'll go. If that happens, I legitimately do not care at all where I am. And that could be the same for a Burns. That could be the same for a Max Fried. We'll try to be as instant as we can with those reactions if they are to come. I think we also mentioned before we started recording that Dustin Pedroia is on the Hall of Fame ballot for next year. So we did want to talk about his Hall of Fame candidacy, but we'll get to that next time too.
So, yeah, we'll be coming at you with a full Hall of Fame pod episode where we'll go through some of the ballots. And that, I know I have a lot of gripes with the voters and the voting system and who gets in and who doesn't. Too. So I'm sure that'll be a good episode coming up. Maybe as free agency starts to die down a little bit before before the class is announced.
Yeah. So we'll see if things unravel as quickly as people expect them to. This has been a ton of fun. And keep it with us. Thanks for listening.